welcome to Friends in Your Ears, a podcast where podcaster Kathy Campbell interviews podcasters about their favorite podcasts on a podcast. I am joined today by two incredible people. I have with me Bree Castellini and Vin Forte. Hello, friends.
Hello.
Hello.
All right, Bree, would you like to introduce yourself and let everyone know where they can find you on the internet?
Sure thing. So I'm Bree. My current podcast is a weekly rewatch of Burn Notice, which is a USA Television show that came out in 2007, and it's extremely culturally relevant. Thank you for asking. You can find us on Twitter at Burn Noticed Pod. That's Burn Noticed with a D. And my good friend Chris Cherry and I rewatch every single episode, and it's a very good time. And I'm sure other podcasts that I've done will come up later, but that's the current and relevant one for the purposes of this introductory segment.
Absolutely perfect. And having finished in the last year a rewatch podcast about Orphan Black, I also understand the fully active world of rewatching podcasts that came out several years before.
Oh, now you're reminding me I need to rewatch Orphan Black because I have never finished it. I would like get caught up and then a new season. Like I don't have a TV, so I don't have a way to like actively watch it. And so like when a new season would come out, like I would lose all of my momentum and it would just sort of fall out. But I remember very much enjoying it. So thank you for the reminder.
The ending is very good. And if you'd like to listen to a podcast in conjunction, feel free to check out Sestercast on the Incomparable Network, which is the same network that this lovely podcast is on. But enough self-promotion. Vin, let's talk about you.
My name is Vin Forte. I've hosted several podcasts in the past. My current podcast is Wrestle Rap. Is a wrestling and hip-hop podcast that I host with my partner, Emilio Sparks, who recently just stopped working for the WWE. And before that, for several years, I hosted a podcast called Anytime with Vin Forte, which was a general interview-based podcast, and that was me interviewing a lot of comedians, writers, actors, people like generally in the comedy world. Probably the biggest episode of that podcast was I had interviewed a woman by the name of Nicole Perlman, who wrote the movie Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, wow. Ooh.
And she had let slip during the episode some information on a project she was writing at that time, which was Captain Marvel. And that got picked up the next day by a lot of websites. And that ended up with my podcast being mentioned in Time Magazine.
Oh, wow.
Which was very interesting and completely unexpected. And then other than that, like I've interviewed a lot of people, like a lot of Simpsons writers, people who've written for like Colbert and Conan. And then, yeah, now I host a wrestling podcast, and that's very loose, very fun. You can check it out over on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify. It's just Wrestle Rap. You can just go to, or you can just go to WrassleRap.com, WrassleRap.com.
Feel free to also check the show notes of this episode with direct links to all of the podcasts that will be mentioned in this episode.
Yeah, I'm occurring as Vin was talking that I didn't actually say where you can listen to my podcast, just where you can follow us on Twitter, which arguably is the more important
link. Way more important.
But the iTunes, you can find us on all the major platforms, but I got a vanity URL for our iTunes link, and it's burnnoticedpodcast.rocks.
Nice.
Because apparently .rocks is a URL type that you can get, and I was very excited about that, and it makes Reddit very irritated because they don't think we like the show. So, of course, that only makes me love it more.
Oh, that's awesome.
Wait, Reddit thinks you don't like the show?
To be fair, the first episode, we are pretty hard on it because Burn Notice has a garbage pilot. But also, my co-host and I are like filmmakers ourselves. And, you know, we are very media critical, even of shows that we like love.
Yeah.
And I really like Burn Notice. And he is fine on Burn Notice and agreed to do a podcast with me. But it turns out fandom on Reddit is sort of like, if you like something, there is no criticism that will be acceptable at any time ever.
Well, now here's the thing. When you're done with Burn Notice, do you move through the U.S. say network canon and start doing Royal Pains and White Collar?
We have had a request for a White Collar podcast. Awesome. By someone who's like, oh my gosh, there's a Burn Notice podcast. Are you going to do a White Collar one next? My co-host has refused to acknowledge the question that was even asked. So we'll see how I get to him there.
I feel like you need a new co-host is kind of what I'm hearing.
I feel like this energy is exactly why he's my co-host. You know, you need someone to fight back against you because I could very easily steamroll over. I've been trying to get him to do a Prison Break podcast with me.
Yeah, especially with a rewatch show, having very dynamic, different ideas is helpful.
I think so, too. I also think just in general, like if you and your podcast host agree on too much, what's the conversation about? Like, it's the same reason, like, I don't have a lot of friends that I agree with 100% on everything. You know, it's like there's got to be conflict. Otherwise, what are we doing here? I really like drama in my interpersonal relationships. It's very healthy for all of us. And I'm not taking questions at this time.
Definitely sounds super healthy. So we're going to just kind of move along to the next question and leave that behind. What got you started listening to podcasts and what were some of the first ones that you remember listening to?
So I don't fully remember when I started listening to podcasts. It was before it was a thing. Like it was before Do You Want to Start a Podcast was the new Do You Want to Start a Band? But it, you know, it wasn't like early 2000s. The first podcast I remember listening to was the Writers Panel. It used to be the Nerdist Writers Panel because I was nearing the end of my college career and I wasn't sure what to do with my Bachelor of Arts in Creative Writing. And I love TV, so I started listening to writers talk about TV writing. And that's when I made the switch to screenwriting because of listening to that podcast. And that was sort of, it's a very momentous, like, first podcast to listen to. And I'm pretty sure that's how it happened.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of times people tend to find a podcast in relation to either their future careers, their current careers, or like their dream careers. And it really is like, okay, I'm looking for this thing. And it shows up and you're just like, oh, cool. And then you maybe find other podcasts in that particular genre. And then you're like, but what about a podcast about pens? Or I want to listen to history. And it just kind of explodes from there. And then you have the never ending queue, which is kind of a good problem to have.
Yeah, I think that exactly describes my experience.
Wonderful. All right, Vin, what about you?
Well, kind of piggybacking off that, that's kind of how I got into podcasts as well. It's kind of like the Wild West. Around college, I guess, if you really want to get back to like where I started listening to podcasts, it was probably a lot of like NPR, just because they were very early on, one of the first places that really saw podcasting as a way to get their content out there. So it was some of the first like very high quality, like very highly produced podcast content. But really, I equate podcasts to sort of like 90s internet, where anyone can do a podcast, anyone can put up a website. But if it's good and if it's consistent enough, like it'll sort of gain legitimacy on its own, just through its own reputation. And I kind of, you know, you look at newspapers, how newspapers become legitimate, like nobody woke up one day and was like, oh, we're all going to follow the New York Times. Like, they just, it came through years of them gaining a reputation. And I think that's the same way with podcasts. And part of what I love about podcasts is also what I hate about them, which is because they could be so esoteric where, like, I used to listen to, who was it? It was Michael Ian Black and Tom, I'm blanking on his last name, but he plays the bad guy in The Flash.
Oh, I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
The name is also escaping me, but.
but they used to do a podcast called Mike and Tom Eat Snacks. And it would just be like every 2 weeks they would get together and like eat a different snack and just have a conversation. And it's like, well, this is just lovely. But then one week you'd wake up and be like, oh, they didn't put an episode up this week. Oh, they're just not. Oh, I guess they're just not doing episodes anymore. So like you'd get these podcasts that you'd really like that were just so weird and singular. And then one day they just end and it's like, oh, this era of my life is over.
Yeah.
You know, for the past 18 months, I've been listening to this one weird podcast and now it's just out of my life. Or you get sort of the inverse of that, where I used to listen to a lot of Marc Maron and like a lot of those interview style podcasts. And like Marc Maron's a great example of when he first started, his whole thing was like him kind of reconciling with old comedian friends that he hadn't talked to in a while. And like, that was interesting because there was a lot of conflict there. And then after a while, it's like, well, he's had President Obama on and like he's had Lorne Michaels on, like all his white whales. Like once he's sort of gone through his Rolodex and talked to everyone he's wanted to talk to, like there's no intrigue anymore.
Yeah.
Like he's put to rest all his like beefs that he's had with all his comedian friends. And then after a while, it's like, well, he's still doing it. Like I'll check in every once in a while, but it's like I all too often I'll fade in and out of podcasts that I used to listen to religiously.
Yeah, it becomes something almost like you're not necessarily that you're not interested in what they have to say, but you're just like, I need a break from this. And it may not be a conscious thing. It may end up being, you know, it just stacks up in your queue and you don't listen to it, or you just delete them as they come in or whatever. But it's your podcast queue is so personalized. And because it tends to be so private, unless you come on a podcast to talk about your podcast, nobody really knows what you're listening to unless somebody's making a comment about, oh, hey, have you listened to X, Y, or Z? And you could be like, yeah, I love blah, blah, blah. Or I didn't really like it, but I know it's their type of a conversation. There's less pressure to perform your what you listen to almost, which is kind of nice that it's this safe niche still.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think it's starting to change a little bit, especially as we get deeper and deeper into like ludicrously popular podcasts. It's getting to the point where it's like, you haven't listened to, you know, insert thing here. You've like, you play D&D and you've never listened to Critical Role.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, you need to relax.
Calm down.
Yeah, like when I was doing the interview podcast, I interviewed Justin McElroy. Yeah, and because I was always a fan of the the brothers McElroy, but I never really quite understood just how hardcore their fans were.
Yeah.
And after a while, like, that's an interesting example where their fans kind of turned me off of them.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. Definitely see that. Yeah, they seem to be a very
protective.
Yeah, I think protective, which is great because from what I understand, like they seem like great guys, and their family is close knit, but also like they can protect themselves or maybe just be nice to everybody and then.
Well, I think. Podcasts are such an intimate medium that they allow people to kind of get sucked in a little too closely. Like,
kind of psychosomatic.
Yeah. Like, I see the same thing happening because I live on Staten Island. And the big thing here is Impractical Jokers. Everyone loves Impractical Jokers. Oh my God, they're the funniest people. Yeah. Okay. They're funny. It's fine. Like they're fine gentlemen, but I do not under any circumstances understand their truly obsessive fan base. Like I've never understood like the people who quote them and like go to every single Impractical Jokers event. Like there's an Impractical Jokers cruise that a lot of people go on. It's like, I just don't get it. It's just beyond me. And it's like that kind of fanaticism I don't quite understand, where it's like, really, these admittedly funny but like middle-aged men are making like young girls cry?
Yeah, I mean, we could have a whole conversation about pranking. I also want to clarify, I said psychosomatic earlier. I meant parasocial. Parasocial relationships, I think, is a big thing with especially McElroy fans because their whole like the intimacy of their relationships and their familiar relationships and the fact that you're like listening to them in your ears makes people feel like they're much personally closer to these people than they actually are. I also want to say that what you're talking about with like the fanaticism of fandom is definitely something that has been rubbed up against our Burn Notice podcast, because like we don't pull punches. Like there are a lot of things that, you know, this show doesn't do well. It also definitely didn't have the budget that it needed for the type of show that it wanted to be in season one. So certain things got there, but like, I also firmly believe that criticism does not equal hatred. Yes. And it makes me nervous when the, like your enjoyment of a thing makes it so that like you cannot acknowledge its shortcomings, because I don't think that the things that you love have to be perfect. And I think this is sort of a danger of internet discourse in general, that like, you know, things are either problematic or perfect. Like there is no middle ground.
That's a very big thing for me as well, is that nobody can just have an opinion anymore. Everything's either got to be like the greatest thing I've ever seen, or it's absolutely the worst. Like, it can't just be, I watched this and I will watch more of it because what I like about it outweighs what I don't like about it.
Yeah, well, and then it makes people feel like morally superior when you're like, oh, I really love like this new show. And they're like, oh, well, did you hear that like one of the writers on the season one writing staff is racist? And it's like, no, I didn't.
Yeah.
Does that factor into the show? Well, no, but they were involved and like tacitly they were fine with that behavior. And you're like, who? Okay, that sucks. But I think overall... my personal decision to keep watching it. And yeah, and it's very frustrating, especially now having a review podcast of a show that is deeply troublesome in a lot of ways, but that I do unabashedly love because it's fun and poppy and, you know, high stakes and action-y and silly and also very bad sometimes. And I can put those two things together in my mind and be fine with it.
Oh yeah, I love like Star Trek. Mm-hmm. And I love like the whole like Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, like that whole run. But I know that the producer of those shows, Rick Berman, is a huge sexist, homophobic jerk. But he also had very little to do with the actual writing of a lot of those episodes, and had very little control over them. So while there was a situation where, you know, you can look at some episodes and be like, ah, they made that person's outfit a little too skimpy, or, you know what, I could see where they wanted to make this a gay character or a queer character, but, you know, maybe someone on high came down and said, let's tone it down. You know, should that devalue all the good that those shows and all the progressiveness that those shows have brought to science fiction? No, of course not.
Absolutely. Yeah. Acknowledgements of shortcomings does not mean that the show is canceled. Like, I don't think things are that like uncomplicated. Like, the world is complicated and we have to learn to live with the nuances of things.
Also, I refuse to watch something from like 30 years ago and cancel it outright, because it's like, it was 30 years ago. Like, not to be like they should have known better, but the difference is, if they made a show 30 years ago that had problems today, then it's like, well, you really should have known better. But it's not going to stop me from going back and watching, I don't know, Fawlty Towers, where, you know, they have a very, where it's a brilliant show, like British comedy show, but also they have a very bad, like, Spanish stereotype character in the main cast is like the cook. And it's like, well, that doesn't excuse it that it came out in the mid 70s, but I'm also, you know, not as upset because it's not like they made it today and we're completely unaware of that.
Well, and I think too, there part of it is like being able to recognize and acknowledge these shortcomings and talk about them, but also not necessarily just write something off because it's not perfect.
Right. Yeah. Like, you can enjoy things that aren't 100% perfect. It does not make you a bad person. It doesn't make another person better than you because they don't enjoy that thing.
Yes. And because nothing is going to be perfect, try as you might, unfortunately, that's how it works. And also, not everyone is going to love everything that you love. That's why there's so much variety in everything. And that's okay too. It's okay if somebody doesn't love whatever podcast that you absolutely adore. Don't get angry at them because they don't like it, or they haven't watched it, or they haven't listened to it, or
any combination therein.
Yeah. Like, it just let people like or not like their things and be nice to each other. That's all. Just be nice.
Yeah, something my co-host and I talked about, especially early on when we started getting some criticisms from Reddit, which we're fine with, but it's like an interesting thing about like, how do you promote a podcast about Burn Notice if people who love Burn Notice hate you? But like, one of the things we talked about early on was like how we understand the sort of ferocity of this sort of fandom in large part because like media is so important to people's identity. And when people love something and it shaped a part of their identity, you know, or, you know, they consumed it during a hard time or like an important time in their life where there was a lot of changes going on, like whatever it is, if they have an emotional attachment to a piece of art, and they didn't notice the, you know, problematic elements or whatever, it can be very hard to see criticism of a thing that you love and are emotionally attached to without also feeling like personally attacked, because it is so much of your personality that this is a thing that brings you joy, that if someone else is like, yeah, but did you know that, you know, insert thing here, that can feel like a personal attack and people get really defensive. Your first instinct is never going to be like, oh yes, I would like to have a reasonable conversation about this. It's like, you're attacking me at my core.
Right.
And I'm not saying that's right, but I do respect that, like, to an extent, that is probably what's happening to a lot of folks. And that's hard. That's a hard thing to have to, like, pull yourself away from if you're not used to media criticism.
Well, yeah, people also want everything they love to be perfect and shiny, and they don't want to take into account the idea of, like, something that I always go back to is the idea of entertainment value. Like, not whether something is necessarily high art or low art, but, like, does it give me joy? And something can be very, very stupid and still give me joy. So when someone says, that episode of Burn Notice, you know, didn't you think that was really stupid what they did in that one episode? I would probably be apt to be like, yeah, it was very stupid, and I love that they really went for it.
Mm-hmm. But that also comes from like, you know, we are podcasters and we are artists ourselves. And for people who don't create art and who don't have to, like, reconcile with things not being perfect, even when you create them and they come from, like, a deep place of your heart, I think people, they don't have the vocabulary to discuss things that are not perfect and things that they just love. Because some people don't consume art, like, really thinking about it deeply. And that's not, like, an intellectual thing or whatever, you know, and it's not, like, an education level thing. It's just, like when I talk about media with my mom, like, this is kind of a tangent, but I recently got very into Outlander, which is an extremely yes. problematic series of books and show, but I'm in love with it. It's exactly the type of suburban mom show that I want to be watching as a 28-year-old in New York City. And my mom and I both really love it, and we bonded over the fact, but, like, when it gets to moments of that show where I'm like, oh, wow, that's a bummer. My mom, like, it just goes right over her head, and she's, you know, very progressive and, you know, a great person, but she has not been trained to watch things with, like, a critical eye. She watches things just to be entertained, and that is a totally valid way of consuming art, but it also sometimes frustrates her when I'm like, oh man, did you see how, like, messed up that thing is that they just did? And she's like, no, I didn't. Jamie looks good without a shirt on. Shush. Everybody shush.
Yes. Be like, quiet. I'm watching the pretty boy on screen. Like,
that's at least a valid, like, I would accept someone going like, hey, look, I just like when this person takes their shirt off and it's eye candy for me. What I don't like is when someone, like, absolutely can't even get in their own head and explain why they like something.
Yeah. And then they get mad at you about it.
And it, well, the perfect example is, and this is going back a couple of years now, but I remember going with some friends, that I didn't really know that well, to see the Planet of the Apes, like the first reboot, the one with yes. James Franco.
Yes.
And there were like eight of us, and we all walked out and we were kind of like, yeah, that was really good. Like, that was surprisingly, and we're all like discussing it and going like what we liked and didn't like. And there was this one guy who was with us who was like, I didn't like it. And we were like, well, why didn't you like it? He's like, it sucked. I didn't like it. And we were like just prodding him like, well, what is it? Like, what didn't you like about it? Was it the people talking too much? Was it too slow? Like, what was it? And he's like, it's the monkeys. I didn't like the monkeys. I'm like, well, what about the monkeys?
Monkeys are kind of a big part of it. I don't know if you noticed.
Yeah, he's like, there's too many monkeys in the movie. I'm like, it's called Planet of the Apes. What are you, like?
Like, what were you expecting?
You mean there's too many monkeys in it? Like, then don't go see Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Right. Oh, that's funny. Yeah. And obviously, this is extremely off all of the podcasting questions, but we're just going to go with it for at least a little bit longer. I watched the final Star Wars movie, and I went with my daughter, who is now 11, but she was 10 when we watched it, and a couple friends. And the enjoyment, I wish I could bottle up the enjoyment that we had watching that movie. And it makes me want to watch everything as a 10-year-old to be able to really enjoy that joy for at least the first time. And then you can go back and, like, really concentrate and critique and make adjustments or whatever. But for something like Star Wars especially, which is so polarizing and so, oh my gosh, this is they ruined my childhood type of a world, being able to experience the final movie with kind of that bubble of, like, this is Star Wars, before I get into the big conversations of talking about all of the issues and story problems and blah, 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 like being able to really enjoy something and then be able to have a conversation about it, I think is important.
There's a difference between having a conversation about something and then feeling like I need to go on YouTube and record a 45-minute manifesto about, like, why Rey is a Mary Sue and blah, blah, blah. Like, The Last Jedi is a great example where I went to go see it, and I really liked the big strokes of the movie, but didn't really like all the small details. I think, like, they kind of flubbed a lot of that up, but I liked the big guy. So overall, I walked out of it and was like, oh, I liked it. It gets a thumbs up for me. There's some stuff that I didn't really care for, but whatever, it's a movie. And then, like, to see the amount of hate it got by all the neckbeards that were just like, this is the worst Star Wars movie I've ever seen. Really? Ever? The worst Star Wars movie you've ever seen?
Really? Did you see the prequels? Like, just throwing that out there.
And people that were saying, like, it's the worst science fiction movie I've ever seen. The worst. It's like, really? You didn't like anything in the movie. You didn't like the special effects. You didn't like, you know, any of the characters. Like, nothing. Nothing about, like, literally 0% about this movie tickled any of your fancy at all. Like, I find that hard to believe.
I mean, this is the thing about, like, what I was saying about nuance is, like, people either love something or they hate it.
Yeah.
You know, or they expect you to love something or hate it. Like, people have very strong, concrete emotions, it feels like, about things, even though I don't think that that is a natural human experience. I think that's something that we have been, like, trained to do because of how prevalent and immediate discourse is about media. Like, you can't just, like, watch an episode of a TV show and be like, oh, that was a good episode, let me move on with my life. Like, you know, by the next day, there's 3 podcast episodes about it, and there's, like, everyone on Twitter has something to say.
Yeah.
You know, there's hashtags, there's trending topics, there's 8, you know, hot takes on Vulture that all have different opinions. Yeah. And at that point, it's like, it feels very much like anytime you consume something, you have to take a side.
Yes, because that gets clicks. That gets that feed. And
exactly. And you have to take a side publicly, because, like, that's a status announcement. Like, whether you loved something or hated it, and whether that puts you on what part, like, side of the public opinion spectrum that puts you on, that also means something. Like, are you someone who liked the problematic movie? You know, are you going to take the hot take that, like, I actually think this was fine? Or are you going to be one of the ones that's like, I know everyone loves this, but I kind of hate it. You know, like, you, whatever side you're on, it feels like it's like an identifier of your own, like, intellectual status and, like,
yes,
your level of culture and all that kind of stuff. And it's very frustrating. It's like, sometimes I just want to watch something, you know, read some stuff that's like, oh yeah, did you notice that, you know, they used this shot, or, like, they discussed whatever, and, like, then move on with my life and watch a different thing.
Speaking of moving on, let's move on to the second question now that we are 30 minutes into this. So the next question I have for you is, what made you want to actually start making a podcast, and what was that first podcast that you made, especially since both of you, it sounds like, had multiple podcasts before the one that you're currently doing, which is always exciting. So talk to me about your first one.
So I'd been wanting to do podcasting for a little bit. I did. I was a competitive public speaker for 6 years in high school and college. So love hearing myself talk, and always knew I wanted to share that with the world, that gift of my speaking voice. And I hadn't really cracked, like, what I wanted to do for a podcast yet. And it seemed kind of daunting because I didn't have any equipment, and I didn't, like, know. I knew how to video edit, but I didn't know how to audio edit and all this sort of stuff. And then the opportunity arose at the startup that I was working at to launch a podcast for work. So it started to come out that, like, it sounded like my boss kind of wanted to do it and had pitched it to one of our, like, advisors. And the advisor was like, oh yeah, you guys should start a podcast. And I was, like, sort of in the background, like, all right. And so I wrote up an entire treatment for the podcast, like the structure, some name titles, like some example guests. And, like, the next time it came up, I just sort of laid the document on his desk, like, oh, I've already thought of this, please let me do this podcast. And he agreed, because you know, I was the talkative one. I was, like, the flighty creative one at the startup, and everyone else was engineers. And so that was a podcast called Forget the Box, which is a podcast about the industry of new media and web series, because the company I worked for was Starable a platform for web series creators. So I interviewed filmmakers and digital media executives and experts, and each episode kind of covered a different topic that was relevant to web series creators. So everything from like the sort of big picture brainstorming a web series idea to really niche like distribution conversations and pre-production conversations and directing tips. Like I would kind of pick a topic and pick a guest that I felt could speak to that topic really concretely. And then I would interview them for like really practical tips for, you know, new filmmakers. And that ran for 2 seasons and I loved doing it. And it never got quite popular enough to justify continuing it, but it was a really, really great experience. I got to meet and talk to so many different people, and that was really a gift. And then once I had all of the podcasting equipment from work, I launched my second podcast, also with my co-host of my current podcast. That podcast is called Brie and Chris Are Depressed, which was a comedy mental health podcast that was actually a companion podcast to our web series, which is called Sam and Pat Are Depressed. Just in case you were wondering how narcissistic we are, extremely. We made an after show for our own other show. But the web series is sort of an absurdist comedic take on mental health. And so the podcast was we would talk about like the, you know, the production behind the scenes stuff of each episode, but then we would expand on the like thesis statement of each episode about, you know, observational therapy comedy. And we, as like the actual people, not the characters in the show, would just talk about our own connection to that mental health topic and talk about mental health more broadly. And that was sort of the structure of that show. And then once the web series ended, naturally the podcast ended because there was nothing else to, you know, discuss there. And I made a joke on Twitter about, would anybody want to do a podcast with me about Burn Notice called Burn, Noticed? And then I suckered him into it. And now we do Burn Noticed. And that is my podcasting journey.
It's a fantastic journey.
3 extremely different shows for very different purposes.
I love it, though. And it really shows, you know, the breadth of podcasting and how versatile it is and how companies can use it in their businesses, and you can use it for fun. You can use it to get out conversations about, you know, mental health issues or talk about a silly TV show. And it's, I just love podcasting so much, and I love podcasts, and that journey is kind of, it's my favorite.
Yeah, I'm also partial to it because I've always been a person, you know, I've always been creative. I've always wanted to create stuff for a living. And like, as I got into college, people were always like, so what is your thing? Like, what is going to be your thing? And I'm like, I don't know. I do poetry and prose and scripts. And like, I was like, I kind of just want to do everything. And they're like, okay, well, what kind of stuff do you write? I'm like, well, sometimes it's like really dark and sometimes it's sci-fi and sometimes it's comedy. And they're like, no, you got to pick something. What is your brand? And I'm like, my brand is I have no brand. And that has never been more prevalent than in like my choice of what podcast I want to produce.
I love it. All right, Vin, what about you?
My journey, I guess, started in college. I was the music director of my college radio station. So I always loved like doing radio, doing interviews. And then after a while, wanted to sort of do my own thing and did the original podcast that I did, Anytime with Vin Forte, where, like I mentioned before, it was a lot of long form interviews. And I wanted to do that basically because I had always been told, like, when I was doing interviews in college, that, like, I always end up asking questions that nobody else thinks of. And I always like surprising people with that. Like, I really like doing my research because a huge pet peeve of mine is listening to interviews where it's just the same stuff you know someone's been asked a million times. Like, if someone's in a band, it's like, how'd you start your band? It's like, well,
do a 10-second Google search and you can find that answer.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, I always liked, you know, bringing that level of sort of professionalism to something like a podcast where, and that's what I like about podcasts in general, is that the really good ones, like, get deeper or more lighthearted than, you know, just sort of the more generic questions. Like, something that I like doing is, like, that interview that I mentioned before with Nicole Perlman, who wrote Guardians of the Galaxy. Now, obviously, you get a guest like that, you're going to talk about some of the bigger things, and you can't really ignore that. But then, like, a big chunk of the interview was us, like, gushing over our favorite, like, Ray Bradbury stories and, like, a bunch of science fiction books. And that's the kind of stuff that I love about podcasts, where you can get a conversation. It turns, like, anytime you could turn an interview into a conversation, like, that's a great, yeah, that's a great podcast. And I always like bring that, that kind of element to any kind of interview. Like, any kind of interview that I would do, like a comedy writer, I would look up like their most obscure stuff and be like, well, tell me about this. Like, one of my favorite interviews of all time that I've done is I interviewed, I don't know if either of you are big Simpsons fans.
I'm not.
Not really.
I'm sorry.
Okay. Well.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry.
But talk about it anyways.
Well, in any case, a lot of people are. And I interviewed like one of the lead writers and showrunners from like 90s, like prime Simpsons. And like that was really fun. And I also like looked up like very obscure projects that they were working on. And so, and I had found like one video where he had mentioned in this writer had mentioned in passing that he was working on a script for a Krampus movie for like Christmas. And this is not the Krampus movie that came out a couple years ago, by this is like a competing different Krampus movie that was apparently being sold to Disney. And I mentioned this to him and he was like, where did you hear about that? Like, how did you? And I was like, I can't say. And he's like, how the hell did you find out about that? I was like, I do my research. And he's like, that's very good. And then like we went on a whole 20-minute thing about that. And like I got to learn about like he had made this movie and he was going to sell it to Disney and they were like so close to doing it. And it was going to be part of like, you know, the Disney Christmas canon. And then they just like got rid of it. But it was something that he just doesn't talk about. And like, I love moments like that where anytime you can get someone to genuinely be like, how did you know about that?
Yeah. And not just, okay, well, they're going to ask me, you know, how did we start the band and what inspired you to start writing, or, you know, how did you start listening to podcasts? Oh, wait, that's me. yeah, no, I love that, getting that personal connection, and especially on a podcast where it is so personal. You have these new friends in your ears that you're hanging out with, and getting to listen to them talk about something that really excites them is just super amazing and exciting, and I love it.
Totally. Actually, Vin, you just reminded me that I actually did college radio. Totally forgot about that. My entire freshman year of college, I had a radio show that I think like maybe four people listened to. At one point, my two closest friends in college, for some reason, the internet on our campus was so bad that like campus itself couldn't listen to the show. Like the radio on campus was terrible. So my two good friends would come into the station to listen to me record because that was the only way that they could hear the show. And eventually, like I would start like throwing things to them because they were in the room. And by the end of the year, it went from a one-person podcast to a three-person podcast where they each had their own like segments and we had all these bits. And it was a very funny sort of transition. Oh man, I totally forgot about that. Good times. College radio.
Awesome. 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 Okay. So next question, I want you to look at your device that you listen to podcasts on and tell me if you were to hit play, what podcast episode would play?
It would start in the middle of the first episode of Gilmore Guys, because I've never listened to it, but I do very much love the show Gilmore Girls, and I like Demi Adejuyibe. Yes. I find him very funny, and so I happened to see something about it today. I was like, oh, I should listen to that podcast. So that would be mine.
Fantastic.
It's only halfway through the first episode, and like the first probably 5 minutes of the first episode is like them from 2 years in the future saying, hey, listen, the first two seasons of this podcast are fine, but if you have been recommended this podcast, it's probably because they're listening in season three and beyond. So like, please don't hold that against us. And I was like, wow, that's an energy to start out with, but all right.
Oh, that's so funny. All right. We'll go with that energy. Love it. All right, Van, what about you?
I am in the middle of listening to an episode of Fake the Nation, which is a podcast on the Earwolf Network, hosted by comedian Nagin Farsad. And it's basically like a roundtable about like this week's news events. And they have like comedians come in and talk. It's like think like Real Time with Bill Maher, but like without Bill Maher, which is the best way to.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's the best version of that show.
Yeah, like replace Bill Maher with a sassy Muslim lady.
All right.
And yeah. And I say Muslim lady because she has a documentary called The Muslims Are Coming. That was a big deal in New York City a couple years ago because she had put up advertisements for it in the subways. And the title of the movie is "The Muslims Are Coming," and
so that went well, I'm guessing.
She had to fight with the city to get the posters back up, and she ended up. They actually ended up doing something really cool, though. They made the posters. They did an unconventional thing, like they would have the title of the movie on it at the bottom, but the whole like gist of the posters was like fun facts about Muslims, where it's like, hey, did you know Muslims can make like really great quiche? Like, you know, just like these fake like fun facts.
That's incredible.
And the documentary is actually really cool. It's her going like into the Midwest and like basically trying to get at like why people are like reticent to be completely blunt about it. Like whenever they see someone with brown skin walk in their neighborhood, right. They're like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
And to try and like destigmatize that.
I just looked up because I was like, I'm very curious what this looks like. And one of the first fact that I saw on an image was, fact, Muslims invented Justin Timberlake.
Yeah.
This is very exactly. Cool. Thank you for bringing this to my attention. Oh,
okay.
And then, so it's that. And then right now I'm listening to some sports podcasts, a lot of stuff from the BBC about soccer, as we call it here. And yeah, that's about a lot of like news and soccer and basketball right now.
The special part about this question is because it's not the, well, I guess you could plan it ahead of time, but it gives kind of a real look at what you're listening to instead of the, oh, this is my favorite. Let me talk about the top five podcasts of whatever. It's like, this is what's actively being listened to. And I like it. Speaking of other things that you might like a lot, what is your favorite podcast? And it's okay to have more than one. And why do you love it so much?
You sent these questions to us in advance, and I've been thinking about it a lot. And it's very hard because, like, as we've kind of alluded to this whole conversation, like, you can have really diverse interests, and it's hard to sort of prioritize or rank them because it's like, this is my favorite D&D podcast. This is my favorite news podcast. And it's like, I tried to answer this question in terms of what podcast, when it's in my feed, will I stop listening to a different podcast that I'm in the middle of to start the new one? And so my answers are Not Another D&D Podcast, which is my favorite current actual play D&D podcast. The hosts are all former College Humor alums. They've all had other podcasts. One of them owns the podcast network that they are doing it on. I just find it like the most consistent pacing, storytelling, and like comedic timing-wise D&D podcast. So I really, really enjoy it. Highly recommend. My favorite news podcast right now is Worst Year Ever, which is, I think it's an iHeartRadio podcast. I could be wrong about that. But actually also weirdly hosted by three former comedians, but they're from Cracked rather than College Humor. And then Reply All by Gimlet Media. Reply All has some of the most consistently interesting reporting and story structures of any sort of NPR style podcasting that I've listened to. And I find them very, very fun.
Love it. All right, Vin.
I would say I tried to think of which way to frame this as well. And I think in terms of consistency, the one I've been listening to probably the longest, but only because it was originally a radio show, is probably The Best Show with Tom Sharpling. That started out life as The Best Show on WFMU, which was a show on WFMU in Jersey, which is an independent radio station. And he would have on a lot of like independent comedians and people from like the New York comedy scene. And there's like sometimes skits where people call in, but it's not done in a very like hokey way. It's like very organic and like sort of hip to the room, if that makes sense. And eventually he continued that as a podcast and has been doing that for a couple of years. And that's, there's a lot of people that I like that go on that show. Like, Patton Oswalt's a big fan, goes on a lot. Like Ted Leo, if you're into music, like he's on a lot. Amy Mann is a big fan that goes on. John Hodgman. So I like the guests as well. So that's probably my most consistent podcast that I listen to.
I was murmuring very cool because sometimes I feel weird when you're doing like a remote recording of a podcast and like you yeah. can't see me like nodding enthusiastically as either of you talk. So I feel like sometimes I have to just sort of mutter things so that you know that I'm paying attention.
Yes, that verbal acknowledgement of yes, thank you so much for talking the words out of your mouth.
I appreciated yes. that you were saying words.
Yeah, it's always fun to do it remotely and kind of specific. So I love this question because it's such a broad statement of favorite. Like, how do you define favorite? Sometimes it's like you do, Brie, where it's like, am I stopping listening for my current podcast to listen to this episode? Or is it sometimes it'll be I plan my day around when a podcast episode comes out, or I listen to this podcast when I am sitting and feeling very lonely and I want to have friends. And that's why this one's my favorite. And so there's no one true definition of what favorite is, but listening to the consistency or listening, you know, stopping what you're listening to listen to it. Those are all fantastic answers. And this is the final bonus question. If you have a question that you would like me to ask my guest, just tweet with the hashtag FIYE bonus. That's fire bonus. And this episode's question is, you wake up in the morning and you have the power to make minuscule little changes in the world. Nothing drastic, can't world peace, can't solve world hunger in a click. But what is one small thing that you wish that you could just change with a snap of your fingers?
Yeah. Can I ask some clarifying questions? I'm one of those irritating people who's like, I know you're giving me a hypothetical, but I need more parameters.
Bring it on. I love it.
Okay. So when you say like little change, like what's my ceiling for that? Like can people lie? Can I stop lying? Is that too big or broad? Is it a behavior?
You know what? I feel like you can, if that's where your like brain immediately went to and you think that's a small enough change, then absolutely.
I'm allowed to define if it's a small enough change. That seems dangerous. You got to give me rules.
I like to see where people's minds are at when I do questions like this. For example, my answer would be making all stoplights work consistently.
That's fair. Yeah, I'm trying to think of like small things that I feel like they're the first domino in a domino effect that seems to be really bad. So like, the first thing that came to mind was our conversation earlier about like people lacking nuance in discussing things that they enjoy. Like, I would love for like just a little bit more self-awareness of like about the fact that no one is going to be perfect, least of all yourself or the people that you hold in high regard, and that's okay. Like the acknowledgement that it's okay to not be perfect
yes.
without being like, you know,
yes.
demonized. And I don't know how to phrase that as a rule, but that would be something that I feel like would be an ideal change to the world.
I love that. I feel that really, is a small change. But an important change. And I am giving you this answer, even though you can't define it in a very specific sentence other than what you said. And that is the perfect definition. It's not necessarily like I'm not picturing it like, you know, a genie question where they will, you know, break down every word that you state.
I know. I've been thinking about the monkey paw is top of mind. I'm very concerned about that coming back to yes. get me.
I would make all current fast food taste like the versions of that fast food pre-1990.
Yeah. Can you give me an example of like what pre-1990, like?
There's always been this rumor now that a lot of companies have cut down on like how they make their food. Like people always say, like KFC is a big example where people go, oh, well, KFC today doesn't taste like KFC, you know, 30 years ago, or Taco Bell, you know, they just squeeze a meat cube into the taco. Whereas like, if you look at commercials from the 80s and 70s, it looked like they actually like had someone cooking beef and like put actual beef in the taco. And it's like, I want I want definitive answers.
You want to side-by-side it.
I want all the fast food now to taste like the fast food from then and see, like, are they BSing us? Is this... Or is it just like some weird like old wives' tale or something?
Right. So if the question was phrased around if you had an easy to use time machine, that is the first thing that you would go back and taste test.
Yeah, because I'm not gonna stop Hitler. What am I like? Who am I? I'm gonna storm Hitler's castle. Yeah, get out of here. Like I'll die before that happens.
I've read the synopsis of the butterfly effect. I know how this can go wrong.
Yeah, if I kill Hitler, like Hitler Jr. is just going to happen.
I love it. Both of those answers are absolutely perfect and in the spirit of this question. And that is fantastic. So thank you both for answering and taking the time and effort and energy to be a part of this podcast. And thank you, audience, for listening to this episode of Friends in Your Ears. You can find us online at friendsinyourears.com or on Twitter at Friends in Ears. You can find Bree at Bree's Own World. And Vin Forte is at Mighty Vin. And I am at Mrs. Soup. Thank you again. And I hope you all have an absolutely amazing day.